Tonight we're going to start with John the Baptist in prison. John, of course, was the forerunner for Christ in the wilderness. Many people liked John. Many people were scared about his message, but he certainly was well known. It seems that Herod Antipas, who was the son of Herod the Great, he had a nice little wife in Jerusalem, and he goes to Rome to visit his brother, Philip, who is a big shot in Rome. And Herod decided that Philip's wife was a little bit nicer than his own wife. So he seduces his brother's wife, brings her back to Jerusalem, kicks out the other one, and of course, as you can imagine, there's a little bit of turmoil. Well, John the Baptist preached against this and pointed it out to Herod. And of course, this makes Herod mad. He feels guilty. And so his answer was to put John the Baptist in prison. So this is strictly over a personal, political problem that John is put into prison. All right, start with Matthew 11:1.
Well, after Jesus had finished instructing the 12 disciples, he went on from there to teach and preach in the towns of Galilee. When John heard in prison what Christ was doing, he sent his disciples to him to ask him, "Are you the one who was come? Or should we expect someone else?"
All right, let's stop there. John's in prison. Remember, we had talked that there was kind of a little rift between John's disciples and some of the followers of Jesus. And some of the followers of John had become followers of Jesus. And so there was a little, little problem between the disciples. And John's in prison. And he sends a message to Jesus by two disciples and says, "Are you the one?" What he's really saying, "Are you the one I've been preaching about? Or shall we look for another?" Now explain to me, what do you think made John ask those questions?
I think he had a vision like the rest of the people. There's going to be some great ruler and going to come about and set up his kingdom.
Okay.
Well, we don't have any details, but since John had started off saying that this is the one, and then he was in prison and he heard what Christ was doing, it makes me wonder, what was he hearing? What kind of messages was he hearing that Christ was doing? Cleansing the temple or what was going on?
What else do you think that John would have these questions?
John had been preaching that Christ was going to come or that the Messiah was going to come. And I think he may have thought, yes, this is him. And he wanted him to contact him. He thought, he wanted contact with him. And this was maybe just a superficial question. Maybe it wasn't a real deep question.
Sure.
He wanted contact with him. He expected him.
Sure. Okay. What else?
No question in prison. You have questions. I mean, you know, you're sitting there.
Who was John the Baptist's cousin?
Jesus.
Okay. And what generally do relatives do for relatives?
Be in my jail.
Look out for them.
And John's asking, "Why am I in jail?
Okay.
This guy's the Messiah. He should, that should be an easy task. Mm-hmm. Get me out of here."
Kind of weak on faith, isn't he?
No weaker than ours.
What do you think? How do you explain this?
I think Roger had it right in the first comment that John probably bought in at least partly to the belief of the Pharisees and the Jewish leaders.
Okay.
He was going to set up an earthly kingdom.
What do you think that John's disciples were saying to John?
Hey, this guy is free. He's out there doing all these things, and look where you are. There's something wrong here.
Stealing your thunder.
Yes. Well, that was what the original conflict between the disciples was. And Jesus left and went away from John's area.
Yeah, he wanted to get away from the conflict.
Yeah.
Okay.
John spoke early on that he was to diminish in significance. Christ,
which is a powerful statement.
Yes.
Powerful statement. We're going to come tonight a little bit later where Jesus says there is none greater than this guy sitting in prison doubting me. But when we come to that, I think that's one of the biggest reasons. What happened to John, though?
Everyone at different times questions their own belief system if they're open-minded at all.
Okay.
And that's what he was.
What do you think the adversary was doing while John was in prison?
Hey, something's wrong. You're sitting here. You're the forerunner and you're locked up here.
Don't you think he worked hard on him? See? What this says to me is there is nothing wrong. I'm saying it's right, but there's nothing wrong with questioning why things are happening. I believe that our Father understands that and reacts to that and considers that. So here's John, who was a forerunner. He certainly wasn't afraid to sacrifice everything. I mean, he's out in the wilderness. He's eating vegetarian stuff and wild honey and doesn't have very good clothes, so he certainly didn't mind giving up a lot. But he had a concept that was wrong. And his concept was very simple. And Roger said it. Here's the Messiah who was going to do what? Get rid of the Romans, take over, and raise the people to the new heights. So now we find him in prison, the devil working on him, his own disciples working on him, and now he must do what a lot of us do when we're in trouble, is reevaluate. And so he tells two of his disciples, I think John needed some assurance. I think his disciples absolutely needed assurance. And so he says, go to Jesus and ask him, are you really the one I've been preaching about, or should we wait for another? God allows us in our weakness, in our thinking, to be open and question him. You know, for a long time, you know, he's always taught, well, he just had to be a man of faith and just accept. But boy, when we start going through the Bible, starting with Job and all the way to John the Baptist, man, these guys had a lot of questions. They just didn't lay down and say, well, I'm a child of God and I just accept it. They question. Now he goes to Jesus. And the two disciples say, got a message, are you the one or should we look for another? Now I think it's very, very interesting how Jesus decided to answer that question.
But Jesus replied, go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor. Blessed is a man who does not fall away on account of me.
Okay, let's back up. What was his test of who he was? Pardon?
What he was doing, how he was living.
The fruits.
Yeah, the fruits. It was an answer to the first two disciples when they said, come and see.
Mm-hmm.
And now here are two more disciples, and they came and they saw.
Yeah. Another version says that Jesus didn't answer that question right off. That he just went about doing what he was doing, then he turned to the disciples and said, go tell them what you've seen. How would we apply that lesson, or should we apply that lesson to modern day?
Well, I think it has to be applied.
Well, let's, before we go further, I appreciate that. Let's back up for a second. What alternative answers could he have given them?
He could have given a bunch of them, but the ones that he gave were prophetic answers back then.
Okay, but what other options? Yeah, what other options did he have?
He could have brought John back to what happened before he was born with his father, and what was done to his cousin, his Mary, and how they fled Egypt. He could have done all of that.
He also mm-hmm. could have gone to the baptism. I mean, John was the one there that witnessed God saying, this is my beloved son, and my whole place.
What other evidences could he have given that he was the true Messiah?
Okay. Like he did with some of the Pharisees.
Okay.
Well, like he did on the road to Emmaus.
Okay. Absolutely.
But in a way, he did review the history when he talked about the blind seeing. That's the passage from Isaiah that's in what, Luke 4.
Mm-hmm.
But that would have just been reviewing what John already knew. I mean, John knew all of those things.
He knew, but did he understand?
No.
Big difference.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he wanted to bring him right up to date today. This is what I've come to watch.
Now, I'm wondering if John did this on behalf of the disciples, of his disciples. Maybe he, well, of course I don't know, but perhaps he sees in them doubt because they're seeing him in prison. Mm-hmm. He said, go and see for yourself.
Yeah, I think there's a big part, but we're going to see, which Leroy already read, that Jesus does rebuke John for the question. Very gently. But I think it was partially John's question, and I think it was partially the disciples of John's question also.
But John knew where to send him.
Knew where to send him. Yeah. But I don't. I you know, from the story, one has to say that John was sitting there in doubt, or needed assurance, whatever words you want to put. He had a wonderment about it. But there's nothing wrong with that.
But doesn't tragedy and hardship in our life bring doubt also?
Yeah, I mean...
Well, I think we need a constant reassurance. A consistent reassurance.
This goes back to the great lesson of Job. You know, we were all taught that Job had just took it and had all kinds of faith. Well, he didn't. It's not a whole lot of faith when a guy says, why was I even born? In fact, I'd have been better off if I hadn't even been born than to go through this, see? So this is the heart speaking. So I think John did have wonderment and his disciples. So I think both of them, first were both benefit. But I don't think it's strictly for the disciples. Okay. What other ways could have Jesus have said, well, I am the true Messiah?
He never used that kind of a phrase at all. He always talked in a way in which whatever subject he was trying to be on, they had to discover the truth for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because you can teach a person, or you can learn from a teacher all you want to, and you're going to forget it, most probably. But the things that you discover for yourself, you'll remember almost forever.
Okay. All right.
Well, he could have done things like the children of Israel had done. I mean, they had a pillar of cloud come and lead them. They had manna fall. I mean, you think about all the things that God in the history and has done to reveal himself. Jesus had those opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Called John to come forth and he'd have been right there with them or something like
yeah.
that. You think about the unlimited potential yeah. he had.
Okay. Now, a question then, I think, and I hope it's a fair question. If we were asked that question today, how would we choose to answer it? How do I know that you're really the true church? Or shall we look for another?
But you're talking about someone asking you, and it's difficult. We were at the Hindu temple having dinner one time in Dallas, and I think it's Hindu, isn't it?
Hare Krishna.
Anyway, so he said, so I see you're a Christian. He said, I said, yes, that's true. You worship an empty tomb, and I said, well, I'm thankful it's empty. Well, he said, we believe in life after death. That's not a big thing. So that people like that are difficult. I mean, that's a difficult thing to talk to about. And he thinks crucifixion was a horrible thing. They see violence as a terrible, terrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Christ was resurrected is not a big deal because cockroaches are resurrected. You know.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a fair analysis to say that John asked the question that was most burning, how do I know that you're the true Messiah, or shall we look for another? And today, if we're asked, how do I know you're the true church, or should we look for another? How would we answer that?
Well, I like part of the answer that Christ responds in when he says, you will see the preaching. You see the preaching of the gospel. Now, when I ask that of myself and my church, I'm really indicting myself, because as a whole, you don't see the preaching of the gospel. We do lots of gymnastics, but not much gospel.
Okay. Any other comments?
Be Leroy's answer would be, and I mean, I don't, as far as the church, I mean, I identify with the church, but I don't, I mean, I was born into it, and it was just, I haven't thought I needed to find something else. I mean, if somebody convinced me that I needed to find something, I would go searching for it, but the real test is if you think that God has been involved in your life from the time you were a child, if you look back, so you've got 81 years to look back for, I mean, sometimes you don't have that many, but I mean, you know, I could look at myself and my history and say this and this and this happened for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It was for my benefit. It was for my development, for my Christian
Okay.
That comes from your relationship with God, really, not your, the church you belong to.
Yeah.
Okay. Why didn't Jesus send back about 15 texts?
Because they're not as good as a witness. Someone has seen something.
Okay. Why didn't he send him back a pamphlet?
Same thing. But they did see him differently than John the Baptist, because John the Baptist fasted and lived in the desert and there was a vegetarian or whatever.
Or locust meat.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know what he
says. All they eat is veggies.
They eat locusts.
All they eat is leaves.
Well, I don't know.
All cows eat are grass. But I don't know if locusts are...
But anyway, and then they see Jesus, and he was hobnobbing with tax collectors and prostitutes and whatnot, and they saw him altogether different. And he ate, and he, you know, he made wine at a feast for people, and they saw him a lot different than John the Baptist. Some people said John the Baptist had a demon.
Mm-hmm. We'll come to that in a minute.
I'm curious about what you say they perceive John the Baptist differently than they...
We're going to come to that in a minute. Yeah.
Thank you.
Come back. And we'll get to that.
When we talk about church, are we talking about a group of people who seek and who have and what have you, a true relationship with God, or are we talking about an organization?
Don't know. I just ask questions.
I think that's the key, is we know others that have a true relationship with God and we see it work for them, then we want to get it for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think what comes into play here is something that makes people feel uncomfortable. Because of what Christ did, he showed them their work, his work, what he was doing. Because the New Testament says, by your works you shall know.
Okay. Well, wait till you hear my Sabbath school lesson tomorrow.
That's what he did.
And you will be a legalist and look for works.
That's what Christ did.
There was all kinds of theological discussions and proof texts and everything that he could have gave and sent back to John. He simply said, probably the most powerful witnessing tool we could ever use, look and see. Now, what did the disciples see again? Leprosy, lame, blind. And preaching of what? What did that say he preached? Good news.
Plus, he raised up the dead. We always think Lazarus was the exception.
This is right after. In fact, what really got this thing going was he had just raised the widow at Nain's son. And this got back to John the Baptist through his disciples. And so now John's sitting there saying, let me see, he just raised a dead boy to life and I'm still sitting here in jail. And this is where then he sent the disciples right after that.
Because they raised the dead too, the disciples.
Pardon?
It says that the disciples raised the dead.
Mm-hmm. See? So he sent back the message, come and see, tell what's going on. Now, I got a fair question because I only ask fair questions. Do you think that John just grasps this immediately? Understood it immediately.
When the disciples returned.
Pardon?
When the disciples returned.
Yeah, they came back and they said, what did he say? And they said, well, he just said, watch. And we saw him heal and raise and take care of leprosy and preach good news and uplift people and taking care of people. Do you think John said, oh, now I got it?
Possibility still exists that John had a vision of an imminent demise for the Romans.
He did.
Well, that was predicted, wasn't it, in in the Isaiah.
That's what you were looking for.
That's what they were looking for, right.
See? But do you think that within 30 minutes after the answer came back, that John said, "Now I see"?
Well, I don't think it happens that way. I think there's a process. And I think those things maybe stimulated him to kind of, in his mind, go back over things he knew, and maybe it started to put things together so he could see a more total other picture. But I don't think it necessarily... I mean, I think we have change that can happen like that, but then I think as the change becomes a part of our life, things start fitting together in ways that we don't know at that very moment we experience change.
Yeah. Well, I think absolutely not. I don't think that was the intention. The intention was to do what?
Stimulate his thinking.
Make him go back and reevaluate and look at what's already there. Now, I got another fair question, because I only asked what? Thank you. Was John the Baptist called by God?
Absolutely.
Was John the Baptist the forerunner of God? First coming. Did he have a message? Was it correct?
Well, he prepared the way.
Did his message change? Did his understanding change?
We would hope so.
He had a message called by God, but his concept was still not understood. He misunderstood his own concept. It's a lesson in there. We never have all of them put together. It's a process of learning. Doesn't mean we're not blessed by God, called by God, used by God. But here's a man that preached very fervently, had the right message, had the privilege of baptizing Christ, and his whole concept was absolutely incorrect. What does that say about us? That God will use us, work with us, despite what our thinking is sometimes. It's the kind of God He is. All right, go back and read the one sentence where Jesus, after he said, "You've seen me heal, do all those things," here comes a little rebuke.
Jesus replied, "Go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor. Blessed is a man who does not fall away on account of me."
So there's the rebuke. What's your translation say other than?
"Blessed is he who does not take offense at me."
Okay. Anybody?
"Keep stumbling."
Okay.
Mine says, "And blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me."
Okay. Anything else?
"How happy are those who have no doubts about me."
Okay. See. What Jesus was doing had become a stumbling block to John. Why? Because his concept of the Messiah was something different. And so he began to wonder.
So Jesus was basically saying, "Blessed is he who has an understanding who I am and what my mission is."
Try.
Well, something good about that statement then is that when John hears this rebuke, he's directed back to reconsider.
Absolutely.
He's got to attempt to put this back together in a way that makes sense that he can understand.
Absolutely.
Was the Sermon on the Mount given before this?
Yes.
So that could have been a stumbling block to John.
Stumbling block to the entire Jews,
right,
that understood it.
But to John also.
Sure. Because he was in the same camp. Which is amazing. But he was in the same camp.
Was John educated
do?
Well, would an educated man eat locusts? I don't think we would consider him.
He wasn't part of the establishment, though.
But you don't have to be taught in the schools to know what the general belief system is of your society.
But his father was a priest.
Sure.
Yeah. Don't know. He certainly knew the scriptures, but he certainly came to the wrong conclusion. So we have to be careful with people. We have to allow people to grow. And this has always been, when it comes to Ellen White, I would hope that her writings 50 years after she started writing would be different than the first year she wrote. And John the Baptist, powerful person of God. Wrong concept. So it says that God allows us to grow. We can never get to the point of saying, well, we have it all down. So he says, blessed is the man that doesn't use me as a stumbling block. Because when you give truth, what happens? Some accept, and truth becomes a stumbling block to others. And since you all wasn't here for the Sermon on the Mount, which was last week, the Sermon on the Mount undid everything for the Jews who understood what he was saying. It undid everything they had had in their religious life. And I'm sure this affected John. Very good point. All right, read on.
As John's disciples were leaving, Jesus began to speak to the crowd about John.
Now, do you see the kindness of Christ? Rebukes him a little bit, wants to stimulate that thinking, but boy, he's not going to embarrass him in front of the crowd.
Well, why did you go out to the desert to see? A reed swayed by the wind? If not, what did you go out to see?
Okay, let's stop there. What does that mean? What do you think Jesus is referring to? Did you go out in the desert to see a reed swayed by the wind?
Somebody changed their thinking, I suppose.
Yeah, you're talking about the Pharisees.
Wishy-washy.
Yeah, Pharisees would go...
one way or the other.
You know, whatever. Some places say that applies politically, but I never get into those kind of things. Just wave back and forth. So he says, did you go out to see John the Baptist waver? Well, the answer is obviously no. He is very straightforward, very preachy. Okay.
What did you go out to see? A man dressed in fine clothes? No. Those who wear fine clothes are in king's palaces. Then what did you go out and see? A prophet? Yes. I tell you, and more than a prophet, this is the one about whom it is written, I will send my messenger ahead of you who will prepare your way before you.
Okay. What a statement. Who was the one that he was referring to? Who were they looking for that was going to prepare the way for Christ? No, I mean, who were the Jews looking for that was going to be the forerunner of Christ?
Elijah.
I think it's the Passover that they still have an empty chair at the table for Elijah. It's one of the feasts that the Jews today still have an empty chair waiting for Elijah. So here's a powerful statement to the people. John was the forerunner, but if John was the forerunner, what's the next powerful statement he's making?
I am the one.
I am the one. High compliment to John. He was the prophet you've been waiting for, and I am the one. Okay?
Well, I tell you the truth. Among those born of women, there has not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist.
Now, how can that be? sitting in a cell, questioning, none greater.
What's this? He directly prepared the way.
Had the greatest calling a person can have. Prepare ye the way. The King is coming. Read on.
For there has not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist, yet he who is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. From the days of John
the Baptist. Stop there. What does that mean? The bottom person in the kingdom will be greater than John the Baptist. What's he talking about?
Well, if you're in the kingdom of heaven, you understand and have a concept of who God is and a relationship with God. So I think that's saying that even as great as he is in his fervor and understanding, there's still a recognition in heaven. You'll have a total understanding that's going to totally blow your mind from what we can even imagine.
Okay. Any other comments?
I don't have to be great in order to enter the kingdom of heaven.
Okay.
I'm willing to listen first.
Okay. Very true. Any other comments? What in our experience, outside of what Christ has done for us personally, what is the greatest thing in Christianity that we've had the opportunity to be aware of?
Well, God's forgiveness and God's grace.
Okay.
Well, the life of Ellen White. Certainly a dichotomy. I mean, as far as think of us.
But what would be the greatest thing in Christianity that we're aware of?
In God's love.
Become like Jesus.
Pardon?
To become like Jesus.
Okay. About the cross of Calvary. I think that the cross of Calvary, not so much that Jesus died to spill blood, but the fact that he died to illustrate once and for all what sin will do to a human being that persists to go down that trail, that he would give his son in order to show us his love, is probably what will make us, the least of us in the kingdom of heaven, the greatest, because we've had an opportunity to see that and touch our hearts. Now the question, we're running on low on time, so we're going to stop there for a minute. Why did Jesus allow John the Baptist to stay in prison, die at the hands of a woman who was absolutely treacherous, and die a death of being beheaded and his head brought in on a silver platter at a big party and made fun of? Why would Jesus allow that to happen to his own words, the greatest prophet of them all? Why? By the way, that quotation is found in this story.
Maybe John the Baptist was resurrected at the resurrection of Christ. We don't know.
Could be. Didn't do him any good when he's about to lop his head off. Why?
Well, we think in so much finite terms. I mean, death and being, you know, having the beheaded and all those things to us. But if you're interested in the bigger picture, it seems to me that you recognize that there's a meaning to it beyond just, quote, the suffering or pain or distress or whatever kind of circumstances that occur. And that's a hard for us in our finite, compassionate tendency not to avoid pain experience to understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't understand it.
Do you think that this example was given to give encouragement to the martyrs that were to come?
Absolutely. That is the reason. Anybody had cancer? Anybody lose a child? Anybody suffer? Had hardships? Things go wrong? How Jesus' heart must have ached not to get John out of prison. But he knew he would survive. He knew he would withstand. And if he would do that for the greatest prophet of them all, his cousin, one he loved, whose heart ached, and he allowed him to die that inglorious death, what hope it gives to each one of us that he cares, he's with us, and it is not if he loves or not loves, it's just and for the martyrs and the things that we go through. We only look back to what John the Baptist was allowed to go through and draw from that same hope. So what if he would have taken him, miraculously delivered him?
I think that would set up a whole false expectation. Oh, God's, you know, this is a...
That's right. People closest to God suffered. Job, Abraham, friend of God, David, person who did everything that God asked of him, 1 Kings 14:8, man after his own heart, John the Baptist. What it says to us, there are no trials that should overcome us if we rely on Christ and we have that hope to look back upon and claim the same promises. John the Baptist sat in that cell. He got that message. And we're told that he went back and began to go back through the Old Testament, and that the angels of heaven helped guide him to the passages and the understanding that he saw. All of a sudden, what Isaiah 61:1 and 2, what Micah 6:8, in the prophecies of Isaiah 53, he began to understand the work of the Messiah was to come and lift up those that had problems, to heal the sick, to bring the good news to the people. And he died with the correct understanding of what Christ would do. But he went back and started searching on his home. God is not an answer person. Because, see, answers do no good. And Leroy said it very well. You've got to go back and look after it. On the walk to the Emmaus, Jesus didn't answer. In the upper room for 40 days, they were going back and going through the Old Testament. The Holy Spirit was working with them. And then all of a sudden, after 3.5 years, and after the resurrection and the ascension, for the first time, they began to put the Old Testament together, and they said what changes lives of everybody, this was God. And their whole world changed. I think the story of John the Baptist has a lot for all of us. Because things didn't end up too good for John on this earth. Father in heaven, the experience of John teaches us several things. Number one, we should rely upon you and continue to search and to study. There's nothing wrong at times, Father, saying, I'm tired, I'm overwhelmed, why is this happening? In fact, you invite those questions from the heart because you can supply answers and give a chance to reassure. And it also tells us that no matter what happens in this life, our reward is to spend eternity with you, and you will not give us that which we cannot bear. And perhaps what we go through becomes a testimony to many others. Thank you for what you do in our life and how you love us. We think especially of Wes and Keith and Crystal. Be with them tonight and tomorrow and the next week as they go through the loss of a wife and a mother. Help us, Father, to be a comfort to them. In Jesus' name, amen.